This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, good morning. It's SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. You know, there is a saying that you're always on the record when you are a person being interviewed. Always on the record. You can say you're not on the record, but technically you're still always on the record. That's advice a good PR agent would give any celebrity or any personality that is being interviewed. But Baker Mayfield may not have gotten the memo, and Baker Mayfield may have gotten the memo and ignored it anyway. When he was blown away that Daniel Jones got drafted by the Giants and then elaborated on talking about how people overthink picks and that you've got to win, and said this to the in the GQ interview, that's getting him in a little hot water. But here's the thing. Baker Mayfield is in a category of people that really shouldn't be making those comments, but everybody else can make those comments. It's very similar to former presidents, right? The old kind of status was presidents don't criticize other presidents, even if it's across party lines, right? A Democratic president that leaves office doesn't criticize Republican presidents, et cetera, et cetera. Oh, and sometimes they do when they make a little noise, but in all, presidents usually just don't talk about other presidents. But in this case, Baker Mayfield is open and honest about something we all talked about on draft day back in April. And we all said the same thing about the Giants selecting Daniel Jones, which was, hey, man, this is weird. This is kind of a reach. And my mind's blown as well. But you're always on the record. And if Baker Mayfield learns anything from this, he'll learn that. The honesty of what he says sometimes in interviews, I think, is great. And I think it's refreshing. And I like it because we don't hear a lot of it from quarterbacks. There's some people that are just vanilla all the time, and it does get old, but it's safe. But in this case, with Daniel Jones, he's saying what we all said. So I don't want to hear any outrage from people who think Baker Mayfield is way out of line, other than quarterbacks don't talk about other quarterbacks, I guess. All right, we'll continue that, plus Hard Knocks last night, trying to do what it possibly could, explaining the helmet situation. Did they do a good job? We'll talk about that coming up next. And a lot more from the NFL as we roll along. That's SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. All right, so talking about Baker Mayfield, who is in a GQ interview, and kind of off the cuff, saw that Daniel Jones was drafted by the Giants. It blows my mind. Some people overthink it. That's where people go wrong. They forget you got to win. Now, this was kind of an off-the-cuff comment that he made, and the GQ kind of nabbed. This is what happens sometimes when you do interviews with people, sit-down interviews with people, is that you throw some comments off to the side, and you're always on the record with these guys, and so they write it down, and they put it in the article. You know, remember Tiger Woods years ago when Tiger Woods was like 21 years old, he was making some off-color jokes in an interview, just off to the side, not as part of the interview process, not part of the Q&A process. He was making some off-color jokes, and they threw that in the article. You've got to be really careful when you're in these settings where a guy, an interviewee, a reporter, if you will, is kind of hanging around with you all day, because they will write down everything you say. You can't. I mean, if you go to a restaurant, let's say, and you don't like the bread, I mean, they'll write in the article that you sat at the restaurant and didn't like the bread, or that you complained about this, or you said some comment about this. You've got to be really careful. They're not your friend. And some of these guys act so friendly, but they're not your friend. But here's the thing. And I was saying this earlier. I don't want to see a over-criticism of Mayfield, because a lot of us said the same thing about the pick of Daniel Jones by the Giants. I did. I know I did. But At the same time, I'm going to give the Giants and Daniel Jones, you know, if they are successful with this pick, I'll give them all the credit in the world. But I found it odd that the Giants reached for a Duke quarterback with six when I felt like they needed other, you know, other pieces. And Mayfield was in the same boat, probably just like all of us who said the same thing. But it's different for him because he's not supposed to say that. I get paid to say it. He's not supposed to say it. It's bad form for him to say it.
Yeah, but don't you? I found myself liking him more because he said it.
That's the question I'm going to get at. Are there going to be some people who say this is probably one of the most refreshing things I've seen? Yeah.
As long as he can back it up on the field. Say it, man.
Yeah, if you feel like the Giants made a mistake, you can say the Giants made a mistake.
Create a rivalry. They made a mistake trading your new teammate.
Yeah.
You know, why not?
So, but I wonder if, does Mayfield, because we don't universally, there's some people who look at this and say, man, this is bad form. This isn't a good look for Mayfield. And I don't want Mayfield. I've said this before. I don't want Mayfield to become a villain in this country. I think he's a great, great addition to the NFL. I think what he's doing in Cleveland is a great thing for the league, and it's a cool story. I think his moxie is well needed at a position that they haven't been able to have a concrete quarterback for a very, very long time there. And I like this guy. I like his moxie. I like that he plays with his chip on his shoulder a little bit. I like all of those things about him. I don't necessarily, and I can understand where people are coming from, I don't necessarily need to know everything that's on his mind, but it is refreshing because other quarterbacks don't do this. Other quarterbacks don't say this. I mean, the most successful quarterback at the position is one of the most vanilla quarterbacks we've ever had in Tom Brady. Brady is very calculated in things he says and does. You know who else was like that too? Was Peyton Manning. Peyton Manning was very calculated. Even the Mike Vanderjagt idiot kicker comment that he made at the Pro Bowl, that was a very calculated thing that he did. He knew exactly what he was doing. He made that shot on purpose. Now, with Mayfield, I don't know if these comments on Daniel Jones was made on purpose, because they seem to have been one of those off-to-the-side comments, not in the actual context of the interview, that gets a lot of these guys in trouble when they do stuff with GQ.
Yeah,
at the same time, this is refreshing.
I mean, he came out and he was trying to sugarcoat it.
Right.
You know, he was doing damage control.
Right. Because I'm sure somebody got to him. Somebody said,
oh,
dude,
of course,
you can't do this.
No, I mean,
because like I said before, it's like presidents talking about other presidents. It's usually not done. It's still done, but it's usually not done.
I mean, you know, you were talking about Tom Brady being vanilla. You know, Tom Brady made a comment yesterday, and then you know, was talking about fantasy football and how that he is a PPR threat.
Yeah,
and then a little bit after that, after he made that tweet, you know, a few tweets after, he goes, let's all hold the Super Bowl 52 jokes, please.
Right? Yeah. You know, but this is Mayfield. This isn't really surprising. I mean, he's done these kind of things before. He's got that beef with Sam Ellinger going on, the Texas quarterback. You know, he was criticizing Sam Ellinger. He planted a flag at Ohio State. I mean, he's had some controversial things, and he's said some controversial things in the past. But remember, too, this is a guy that was a walk-on, right, at Oklahoma, won a Heisman Trophy. He has had his critics. He has had some of the doubters. He does play with a chip on his shoulder. That's why people like him. Why he would go after or make this comment about Daniel Jones. He didn't play Daniel Jones. It's not like there's a rivalry with Daniel Jones, other than he's like us.
Well, what were
the Giants doing?
I almost have the feeling that, like you said, it wasn't part of the actual interview.
Right.
And maybe they were just talking back and forth, just off to the side. They were done with the interview. Maybe it was before the interview even started. And they're just going back and forth, just jarring with each other. And, a new rookie quarterback question came up, and then he made his comment.
Yeah.
I always get the feeling it was like that. I don't think it was part of the actual GQ interview. Like, the reporter probably said, all right, well, let's get started. And
right. No. The way it was described was he saw Jones on television.
during the, as they were kind of getting ready for the auto. So the way it's at least being described was he saw Jones on television and then threw that out without even being provoked. Just saw it and said
I'm
it
loving
anyway.
Him even more.
I mean, that's you know, because again, you know, you have so many examples of something happening that we all you kind of. Nothing should be surprising, right? Like when something happens over and over again, when you get into those situations, it shouldn't catch you off guard. It's like social media, right? It's like all these people who put out, like, I don't know, really, you know, some sort of tweet, racist tweets or whatever, and then they get fired and they go, I don't know what I was doing. Well, in 2019, you should know what you're doing, right? Like, we all have been around this enough to know of the stories of people who have written things on Twitter that they shouldn't, or Facebook things that they shouldn't, and they get in trouble for it. Whether you like that policy or not is irrelevant. We now live in a world where that is happening, and people who are caught off guard are really, you know, really shouldn't have their head in the sand. Mayfield, even though he's a young guy, he's been in the public eye long enough to know that looking up at a screen and seeing Daniel Jones and making an incendiary comment about Daniel Jones is going to probably be in the report or the story that GQ is doing. So I think he knew what was going to happen. I think that somebody got to him and said, look, man, this isn't a good look. We're kind of America's darling right now. Let's keep it that way. We don't need you to be the guy that says everything that gets people riled up. We don't need that. We've already got that with Odell Beckham Jr. We don't need another one.
But don't you get the feeling that there's not going to be a tremendous amount of backlash for this?
I don't think there is, but I think there is a protocol thing that I think people will attack him for. There is going to be a level of uncomfortability here. Here's the problem. Here's where people are going to say there's a problem. I don't, because I think it's a little bit refreshing. This is an attack that is not warranted. There's no relationship between these two people, right? And he knows that in the end, this is a criticism of Daniel Jones. And to be honest with you, and we've said this before, this isn't Daniel Jones's fault. What was Daniel Jones supposed to do? Call the Giants up and say, no, 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 no. I'm six? No, 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 no. I'll tell you what, if you guys want me in the third or fourth round, if I'm still around, call me then. I am no, 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 no. I can't be six.
How fantastic would that be, though?
This is on the Giants, right? This is a Giants criticism. You want to pick on the Giants for taking Jones? Pick on the Giants. Daniel Jones is like, no, because he made the comment later on saying people overthink it's about wins and losses, and Jones's record at Duke was mediocre.
Okay, well, no, but it sounded, I mean, at first he was kind of picking on the Giants, like, I can't believe they took him in the first round.
Right.
I mean, that was all about the Giants. And yeah, I agree. I think it would melt Twitter if Daniel Jones decided, no, I don't know, I'll sit here, I'll wait.
Yeah, no, you don't want to take me.
Come back around.
Defensive stud out of wherever.
I'll still be here.
I'll still be kicking around. And you know, to Daniel Jones's credit, he said, you know, I got a lot of other things to worry about than that. Good for him. But again,
part of the Manning school of thought.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Eli said, yeah, my dad's got some advice about this. Here, just move along.
Here, just read this statement.
Yeah, read this statement. Had this printed out for me, too.
5 years ago.
But I will tell you this about Mayfield. This is, I think it's refreshing, even if you don't like the comment, even if you're like, I disagree with it, or I don't think it's good. I think this is what's going to make him. I think there's a magnet that he has where you can be drawn into him because of these comments.
Not only that, I want to, you know, if you look at the quarter or you look at an NFL football team and you know, compare it to any type of rock band, the quarterback is the front man.
Right.
And you want your front man to be somewhat outlandish to grab attention from everybody. That's what makes some of the most, greatest bands in history, iconic, like, you know, the Rolling Stones. I don't think they would be as successful if it wasn't for Mick Jagger. And so I look at it and I say, you know, the Browns are going to need that front man. They need that focal point that everyone can kind of gravitate towards. And it's always the quarterback. We know all 32 quarterbacks. We may not know, you know, every team's top wide receiver, but we'll know every single quarterback. because they're the front man of this band. And I have no—that's why I have no problems with him saying what he wants to say, as long as he can back it up on the field. Now, if he goes out there and has that sophomore slump, then you know he's going to be eating crow.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. So, but you know what? Like I said before, I think Mayfield has a really good opportunity to be a beyond quarterback celebrity for a team that has been dying to have that position solidified. Mm-hmm. And now that it looks, I don't know, we'll see. I mean, he's still got a couple more years. If in a couple of years we realize, okay, they finally have found their starter, they finally found the franchise quarterback, these kind of things, I think will, to a lot of us like me, are at least refreshing to see. I like the honesty. I like his willingness to put himself out there. He doesn't seem like a dumb guy that got caught off guard. He can spin it all the way he wants, but I think he was smart. I think he knows what he's doing, and I think this was a statement that he made, and he'd be willing to back it up if the organization let him. The spin sounds like somebody else said, clean this up. Take care of this. We don't need it. We don't want it. You know, don't criticize other quarterbacks. But Baker Mayfield's probably like, I don't know why we don't criticize other quarterbacks. Why not? And right? People criticize me. I criticize them. We'll go from there.
And honestly, the greatest thing that can come out of this, if Daniel Jones is successful with the Giants, maybe we have a new Manning versus Brady.
Maybe so.
Happening.
Gee, I mean, the Giants and the Browns. Manning versus Brady. That would be kind of, yeah. Yeah, that would be a nice universe.
I know they won't meet up in the AFC Championship, but maybe there's a couple of Super Bowl runs in them.
Maybe. Well, yeah, that's
kind
true.
Of fantastic.
All right, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's. All right, Hard Knocks last night. It was episode 3, a little bit of Antonio Brown there, but a little bit more on the Raiders in general. It was a pretty good episode. We'll talk about that coming up next. It's SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios alongside Ron Culver. Here's Tony D.
All right. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service every day at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. All right. So last night, episode 3 of Hard Knocks, I was really looking forward to it. Because I thought we'd get a better explanation on the helmet stuff, the frostbitten feet. I wanted to see how they put that in the episode. One of the things, and Frank Schwab writes about this in Yahoo Sports in his analysis of the episode, and I thought he kind of put it brilliantly, which was what we like about Hard Knocks is when we're following this in real time, right? I mean, there is the bits of news that go on in training camp, and then Hard Knocks is producing it as it's going, and we get it in a rather short turnaround. And they sort of put it all in context. But it's hard because you know the news before it plays out on the Hard Knocks episode. So there's no real drama there, right? I mean, you know that Antonio Brown comes back to camp, and you know that he files for the loophole of the helmet regulation, and that it gets denied, and then he gets frustrated, and then he doesn't come to camp again, and then Mike Mayock comes in and does his speech. That all happened in a very short amount of time, and we all knew about it, and we all followed that, and then Hard Knocks has to put it together for a Tuesday episode. So you're not getting anything really new, but you are getting it in some sort of timeline, and you can also get the microphones and the behind the scenes stuff. They really didn't do a great job with the behind the scenes stuff. They did the best they could, but there's not a lot there other than the Raiders supported him up until that point. Then Mike Mayock said, that's enough. We expect him in camp. We want him in camp. That he's either all in or he's all out. Up until that point, the Raiders had said all the things that you would want to, you know, they said, They understood what he was concerned with. They understood the familiarity of using a certain helmet. So they backed him up until they couldn't back him anymore. But one thing I will say, I criticized John Gruden for when he was really over, he felt like he was overly backing Antonio Brown, right? There was these early press conferences where he was very supportive of Antonio Brown and the helmet issue. And I said, boy, if you're Gruden, why are you doing this? He's on your team. You're not trying to sell him the Raiders. You don't have to sell him on it. He's yours. And if he's bothering camp, if this is an annoyance, if this is a distraction, if this is a frustrating part of not having him in camp because of the helmet situation, say so. Say, like Mike Mayock did, finally, enough. That's enough. But I now understood where Gruden was coming from. And there was a moment in the episode last night where Gruden and Brown are on the sidelines. And they're just talking. And Brown just flat out says to John Gruden, thank you for having my back like you did. You were really, really supportive of everything. And I really, really appreciate that. And Gruden said, man, I'm like you, blah, blah, blah. You know, I understand where you're coming from, et cetera, et cetera. And you could see this player-coach bond that was really tightening up. And I think Brown was looking for that and never really got that with Mike Tomlin. And Gruden might have known that and said, all right, I'm going to be this guy. I'm going to be this guy for you. And it might have been, again, it might be 3D chess John Gruden is playing, but it works. It worked. Because when Brown is finally in camp now, he knows that no matter how this helmet situation played out, that his coach had his back throughout it all. Because Brown was saying, everyone was laughing at me, everyone was making fun of me, and you had my back, and you had my support. You know, and I just saw a different view of what I criticized Gruden for. I saw that last night in the episode. I bring this up because that is what I like about this show. That is why this show, even though it follows the same exact formula, year in and year out, it's camp, here's a couple of people, we're going to follow their stories, you're going to get to know them a little better, they're all grinding to make the team, some of these guys will, and some of these guys won't. Oh, and here are the stars, and here's some more information about them. It's the same formula. But sometimes you get these little nuggets in the episode that make you go, wow, this is cool. I'm glad there was a microphone on this. I'm glad I got to see this. This is cool inside information that you don't always get to see. Conversation between Derek Carr and Antonio Brown once about where Antonio Brown was cutting and where he was going in the route. Really, really good stuff if you like that kind of football stuff. Really good stuff to hear quarterback and wide receiver working that out. That was great. Also, they went to Arizona to play on a short week. Gruden kept calling it, it's a short week, guys. It's a short week. And they went to Arizona. They showed the team meeting. They showed Kyler Murray, how dangerous he could be. But overall, it was, of course, to talk about all the different things that he wanted the Raiders to see. There was other player profiles in the episode last night that were good. But for the most part, it was a good episode to follow a team going on the road, playing in this preseason game. Again, focusing on what the coaches are seeing from the players. Loved Mike Glennon in that game against Arizona. Nathan Peterman had this really long touchdown drive that they were impressed with. But overall, it was another one of those episodes that you've seen before, right? Here are the guys that are really going to have to make and stand out if they're going to make this roster. So that was kind of, you know, the similarities of the seasons past was perfectly on display last night. Same kind of formula, but there were some added bonuses to it. Overall, pretty good. I still think, and I don't know how they can do this without just coming right out and having somebody look at the camera and just give you all the details. I think this helmet issue, to those who are just on the periphery, right? They just hear stories. Maybe they don't read a lot of stuff. That still could have been explained a little bit more. And in more detail, what exactly is the helmet problem? It's not dumbing down per se, but you know, don't just say the NFL has outlawed this helmet for safety reasons. Maybe go into little details. Why? Why does Antonio Brown like this helmet? What are some of the things about it that he likes? Why is he so upset about it? They really never got into that. And I kind of wish they would. SB Nation Radio.
This is SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio. L. Ron, I've got a recommendation for you.
All right. I'm all ears.
Ramona Shelburne and the 30 for 30 crew have put out a five-part podcast series on the Donald Sterling saga.
Yep.
That happened. Great, great stuff. I really enjoyed it. I was going to listen to this one segment at a time, like throughout my day yesterday. I was going to be like, well, I'll listen to that, and then maybe tomorrow I'll listen to part two. I listened to all five the whole day. I was literally walking around the house last night, and like just with my headphones on, listening to this thing.
Being antisocial.
I was antisocial. And I said, it was really well done. A lot of the story I knew, but there were some things I didn't know. It was kind of cool. Like, I did not know Donald Sterling basically was the main reason Jerry Buss bought the Lakers. Because Jerry Buss needed money, and Donald Sterling bought a lot of Jerry Buss's properties to give him the money to buy the Lakers. And then when he saw how successful Jerry Buss was and how popular Jerry Buss was buying the Lakers, he wanted to buy a team. He's like, wait, I want to get into that business. He's like, one thing to own real estate, but I want to get into that business. So he bought the Clippers down in San Diego. And that was kind of neat, the early days of Donald Sterling. But the whole Adam Silver's press conference and how shocking that was that he banned Sterling for life, because normally commissioners don't do that with owners, right? It's just a different world owners live in. It was a really fascinating walk through the entire history of Sterling's ownership of the Clippers, how cheap he was, how bad that organization was, how embarrassing they were, how much of a problem it was for the league to have this guy as an owner when everything was so successful. The league was taking off. It was just exploding. And then you had the Clippers, and they were just cheap and awful and terrible and really an embarrassment. And then all through the selling of the team by Shelly Sterling to Steve Ballmer, and how that all went down, and how, remember, they got Donald Sterling, they got two doctors to say he had dementia.
Yeah.
So they could get this sale. They could sell the team for $2 billion. It was a really fascinating kind of, just kind of a nice encyclopedia reference on all of it, just putting it all together. It's really good. But it was neat to hear about. It's all about Southern California, how the Lakers winning championships and bringing a reminder. And I thought this was really good of what they did. A reminder of where the NBA was at the time that Jerry Buss was buying the Lakers, and where it was as a league. How just it wasn't. It didn't look like it was going anywhere. The NBA Finals were on tape delay. There was a lot of drug abuse in the league at the time. Teams were moving. It just, it had not solidified itself as a real player in the sports environment at the time. And then the Magic and Larry saga kicked in, and the NBA started taking off. And boy, these franchises were getting really profitable, and the TV deals were coming in, the money was coming in, and all of a sudden it was like this just incredible roller coaster of how much your product was being valued at. Sterling bought the Clippers for $13 million, sold it for $2 billion. Right. Well, she sold it for $2 billion, and I don't think he got a piece of it, obviously.
Nice payday.
Amazing, amazing, amazing investment.
But I know one thing, that Donald Sterling was always in shock that Steve Ballmer just had $2 billion in liquid cash.
They brought that up. That's funny that you bring that up. They brought that up at the end. He said to Steve Ballmer, you have $2 billion. He didn't really know who Steve Ballmer was.
He said,
you have $2 billion? And because at the time, Ballmer was worth $20 billion, right? And he goes, yeah, I have it. And he goes, you have that in cash? And he goes, yeah, you can call my bank. The funds are there. We can wire the money. We can get the money for you. And he berates Ballmer, saying, you need to invest that. You can't have that. That's stupid. You can't have that in cash.
What is wrong with you? You can't. You have to put that away. You have to have that locked up. And he berates Ballmer for this because he's an old school. That's what you did with money. Yep. You didn't just let it sit in the bank. That's stupid.
Let it gain some interest.
Let it gain some interest. But yeah, you're right. He was blown away that Steve Ballmer could give them $2 billion in cash for the team.
But you think about it. That's just remarkable. I that's a whole nother level of life that I'll never understand.
Oh, it's nuts, and very very few people can pull that off.
Nah, but
like there are billionaires on paper, but there's not liquid billionaires like that. We don't have a lot of those guys.
No, that's like you and I just being able to hand over $200 to someone,
right?
You know, and our kids going, you have $200 in cash?
It's crazy.
How did you do that? How did you manage that? Well, you know, you work hard, you get it.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why sometimes when these teams do go up for sale, you hear names, but they're really, a lot of it is just publicists putting their name out there like, oh yeah, no, they're interested, but they really can't. They can't buy the team. They don't have it as liquid assets.
Like Derek Jeter.
Yeah.
Derek Jeter's a perfect example. I mean, we all look at him as, oh, he's the owner of the Marlins. And he's like, well, he's one of several.
Right. Oh, it's the same thing with Mickelson. Remember Mickelson was going to buy the Padres? And I'm like, look, I know Mickelson's very wealthy, but I don't know if he's own a baseball team wealthy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a whole nother level of wealth. That's not, you know, that's not sign the checks wealth. No, that is get the checks wealth.
Yeah, I'll switch it to another sport. David Beckham owns an MLS team because he's been having issues getting a stadium off the ground in Miami.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And but he's, you know, David Beckham's one of the most recognizable athletes on the planet. But even he needs help. And we're talking an MLS team.
Yeah, exactly.
He needs financial backing.
It's a different level of rich.
Yeah.
But one of the fascinating things about it, and again, it was really well done. It's an easy listen. It doesn't bog down. It flows really well. Ramona Shelburne is a great narrator for it. She tells a great story. A lot of different people lend their voices to it. It's well written and it moves. It doesn't bog down. A lot of times, one of the reasons 30 for 30 is why I like some and don't like some is I think some put in too much filler and too much backstory. And sometimes that backstory isn't really interesting. I kind of want to get to the meat of the issue when I watch a 30 for 30. If you're going to tell me about some event in sports that was a big deal, I do need to know the backstory, but I don't need you to dive that far into it. Now, sometimes it works, like in the OJ documentary, it worked great. It was absolutely important to the story about going back to the 60s and race relations in the city of Los Angeles. That was very important to the overall story. But sometimes they just do it because they need to fill time. This doesn't do that. You feel like every bit of information is well blended. But when they get to, right, when they get to the moment that the tape was released and we publicly knew how Donald Sterling felt when he told V. Stiviano, you know, don't bring black men to the games, right? When he made that comment, there was this feeling of what were the Clippers going to do? They were in a playoff series with the Warriors. Were they going to boycott the game? And there were some people.
That.
Remember, they said there were some people who said they should. And then they're on this. They're on this documentary. Some people said, "God, I was so disappointed that they went out and played. That they should have said, we are not going on that court. We'll sacrifice this game. We'll forfeit this game. But we will not be playing for the Clippers tonight." And some people said, no, they worked so hard, but they made the statement by not wearing the Clippers warm-up gear or whatever that they that they were saying, look, this is too important to us, and we're not going to let him and this issue derail us of a dream that we've worked our whole lives for. But we are not going to put up with this. But we're also not going to, you know, protest this game or kind of not play. So that was a really interesting segment of the aftermath of that, how the Clippers were handling. Doc Rivers, there was one, the way she put it, she said they had a team meeting. They all talked about it. And then Doc Rivers said, I'll be the voice for all of this. So you all don't have to be. And how Doc Rivers had to step up and be the guy that spoke for the team so he could take it off their backs about how emotionally charged this was. He was willing to take it all so that they could just concentrate on being basketball players and let that and just say, look, let's get through this. But I will take all of the questions and I will speak for the team. And how he had to step up as a leader. It was really, really great.
The only problem I have with this is I hope this isn't going to start taking away from the actual 30 for 30s.
Yeah, I don't. I hope not either, because that would have. I kept thinking about that too. Like, I would love to have seen this as a television program. It was really important. I mean, it's one of the most important events in the NBA of how, because it wasn't just. Donald Sterling wasn't just some quiet owner that you never heard from that made this comment and then the NBA dealt with it. He was a problem for a long time in the league.
Like, by example, I'm already forgetting the guy's name, the Carolina Panthers owner.
Jerry Richardson?
Jerry Richardson.
Yeah.
You know, a similar situation for him, but I think that whole situation was quiet. It was quickly dealt with and taken care of.
Yeah.
But he wasn't as outspoken as Donald Sterling was.
And that was the other thing. There was they really dove into all of the problems that Sterling had. I mean, he would bring people in to the locker room, his buddies in the locker room, and he treated the players like property. He would go around and he'd pat them on the shoulders and he'd have his friends go feel his muscles, his muscles. Right. Like, and that freak, and these former players were on this podcast going, that really freaked me out. I hated that. Like, he really treated us like property. Like
you've seen a couple of movies set back in the, back in the olden times, and they're doing the same thing. But the only difference was an auction.
Right. Exactly. And that's what they talked about.
And you kind of had that feeling when he was doing that. It's like, it's almost as if you're auctioning off these players. What are you doing?
Right. Right. And he has these quotes where he talks about buying players. He has these quotes about, I give them houses and cars. Who else is going to give this to them?
Yep.
Right. Like, he has these comments. So he's a problem for the league for a long time. So now they have a chance to get rid of him. And they have, but on the flip side of that, here's a voice like Mark Cuban who comes out and says, yeah, I'm not really comfortable with this because I don't like the way we're taking away a team, because he's worried about the slippery slope, right? He's worried about, all right, we obviously hate what he said here, right? So we're going to take a team away. But how far does that slope go down, right? If I support a certain political candidate or I support a political cause, does that become a problem? And you can take my team away? Like, there's this level of cautiousness that, like, Mark Cuban was willing to do publicly, even though it wasn't the most popular thing to do, because I think everybody was like, this guy needs to be gone and needs to be gone today. Cuban is trying to bring it back, going, wait, we're forcing a guy out because of this, even though it's reprehensible. But at the same time, I need to know where the boundary is. Like, I need to know that, you know, where is that going to go? Can you just do this at any moment of any day, that I could wake up and lose the Mavericks because I said something about some referendum that's going on in the Texas ballot, for example, that people don't like? Like, that's what he was concerned about. It's a really encompassing story, and it's really well done. It's really, really good. So I thought you would like it, being a SoCal guy, kind of being in the Laker Clipper era.
Being very familiar with that story, too. I remember that whole thing was going down.
Yeah.
It still, to me, is amazing.
And it was...
I guess the most important thing, like you were saying, is one of the most important things in the NBA. You can go sports general, because we've never had a league force an owner out.
Yeah. And Adam Silver, how absolutely... he was so forceful. And, you know, they wondered if David Stern would have done the same thing. You know, David Stern was an owner's commissioner. Is there a difference between the two? Maybe he would, maybe he wouldn't. But Adam Silver was like banned for life, blah, 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 you know, came down really hard. And it was a little shocking, because we don't see commissioners do that with owners. I mean, really, no, owners?
His bosses.
Those are his bosses, exactly. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's, as we roll along. It's a Wednesday on SB Nation AM.
You're listening to SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
I was just getting done telling Ron about how I was listening to that the Donald Sterling saga podcast that 30 for 30 was putting out. And I also, Ron, I have to tell you, also last night I watched the Fire Festival documentary again.
Again?
I can't help it. You know what? You know why I did it?
Because you want to start your own music festival?
Yeah, that's right. No, because I did watch the Woodstock documentary after last week. And then I remembered, boy, this is so different than the Fyre Festival that went down. And I said, I think I want to see that disaster again.
So are you thinking that the organizers for the Fyre Festival, maybe they should have watched the Woodstock documentary?
Yeah, because...
Taking a few notes?
Maybe taking a few notes. I don't know. Don't you think you need music for your music festival? Or at least a place to do it? God, that's such a... It was... I don't know. What's that? You know, when you watch something, I know there's a word for it. I never pronounce it right, so I'm not even going to try. There's that word that says you delight in other people's failure. I like watching that documentary because I delight watching in their failure of the Fyre Festival and all those kids with all the money going down there and not getting what they wanted. Oh, I don't get a yacht with supermodels. What happened? Because there was never a yacht with supermodels, you stupid idiot. Did you really think they actually were going to pull this off? By the way, this hour of SB Nation Radio presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. I've never gone to a music festival. I think I'd like to once, though. But I'm getting older, and the older I get, the more loud music is. But I would like. I think I'd like to go once.
It'll soon be like a music festival of folk music. Aging bands
probably
aren't gonna be playing that loud, and you're like, yeah, I can dig this.
I can get down with this.
I'll put a flower in my hair.
Gotta go to one. Gotta go. Bonnaroo here is in Nashville is great. Maybe one year I'll venture over there and check it out. It's SB Nation Radio.